We're talking with Dr. Art Barnaby from Kansas State University. Dr. Barnaby, let's talk a little bit about, I guess it's almost the whipping boy, it seems like, these days within a lot of the talk regarding agricultural policy, and that is our risk management or our crop insurance program. It's, when it's all said and done, assuming direct payments are going away, and it looks like they are, it's going to be the last pot of money out there that folks can take dead aim at. Is that the main problem, you think?
I think that's primarily it. There are people who want no farm program, no farm safety net at all. And, yes, I think this is the last pot of money to go after. As you saw the numbers up there, the pot of money is relatively small. Over the last 12 years, the average taxpayer cost has been a little over $4 billion. And throw in another billion or so for the delivery system. So we're talking a little over $5 billion a year. And in Washington terms, that's not big numbers.
When we start thinking about the folks that have kind of attacked crop insurance, you pointed out several numbers that have been floating around out there that are just flat out wrong.
They're just flat out wrong. There was early on in the 2012 year when it looked the drought was on the way in the Corn Belt, there were numbers floating around that it was going to cost the taxpayers $40 billion. That was an impossible number from the get-go, and people should have known better. But it got reported in the press, and after a while, nobody ever challenged the number. Then later, when it became clear it wasn't going to be that much, then the story in the press was that it was going to cost taxpayers over $17 billion. Well, when you net out all the numbers, it's closer to $12 billion, and then you put that in perspective, that's one time in 20 years. That's not every year. In fact, you have years the other direction where the premiums exceed claims and government costs are very small in those years.
When we think about how crop insurance is structured today, there continues to be, obviously, USDA from time to time has gone back and renegotiated the deal with the insurance companies. Right. I'm sure there's going to be pressure to do that again, because there's been calls about too much of a subsidy back to those insurance companies.
That's the claim. The way I've always approached that is it depends on which side of the desk you sit. If you sit on the insurance company side, and as a matter of disclosure, I have a son in the insurance business. He does excess surplus lines, have anything to do with crop. But nonetheless, the returns are never high enough if you're the seller, and they're never low enough if you're the buyer. And that's the same kind of thing that's going on here.
When we think about how we make sure that farmers have a reasonable price crop insurance available to them, where is that balancing point?
Again, you're talking about if I'm a buyer of crop insurance, it's way too high because I'm writing checks for it, and in most years you are writing checks for premiums. Same thing on the hail insurance, because a lot of folks in the Great Plains supplement their federal coverage with private hail coverage. That gets very expensive in areas that have lots of hail. So you always think it's too expensive unless, of course, you get hit, and then – gosh, you're glad you bought it at that time. So, again, in theory, we are adjusting the rates to reflect the risk. These numbers are hard to pin down, of course, because you can get results that totally outside the forecast. 2012 was kind of one of those years. But on the other hand, they've happened in the past, so you've got to assume they're going to happen in the future.
We've had, of course, payment limitations on crop subsidies, the various payments that we get from target prices, from the direct payments and all of that. There's been calls for subsidy payment limits when it comes to crop insurance premiums. How would you do that?
Very difficult, actually. Payment limits, if you drive out farmers who are large scale, they may actually be generating underwriting gains. And I don't know that anybody knows the answer to that. But if they are, that's going to mess up the rating structure. Payment limits itself on the indemnity payment, that's been proposed. That would really be a disaster for commercial agriculture because, you know, 5 or 6 years in a row, you may have no claims at all. And then all of a sudden, you have a really big loss. And you know, let's say it is a $400,000 payment. That sounds like big money in Washington, but a new combine, I'm told, is $400,000 bucks. And then you got to add the price of the header to it. When you add those dollar amounts up, $400,000 is not a big deal. It's only a big deal by the folks who think that they're still, in my view, thinking in terms of the 1950s when we had two-cylinder John Deeres, which no longer exist either. So it's a different world.
Right. And, of course, they think all farmers are rich, too.
Oh, yes, I understand. although farming has had some good years here as long as you've had yields. Now, farmers that have had crop failures, even with the insurance, probably aren't making gobs of money. They're probably – maybe they're able to keep their loans current, but not much beyond that. Nothing like a great crop to make a big difference in the bottom line.
We've seen, obviously, some real progression and evolution, if you want to call that, of the type of products available to producers. Where are we going? Where's the next generation or two out there?
That's a good question. One of the things that's kind of interesting is the Stax program for cotton. That's a whole different type of an insurance contract. It has implications beyond just cotton because it's an area triggered plan. For one thing, it says we're going to have better farm level data based by county in order to make that system work. Interesting enough, the government always has that data because farmers report their yields for crop insurance purposes. So I don't see that we need new survey data or research. The data is probably there. It just needs to be in a form that can actually be analyzed. But you're going to need that kind of data to drive a Stax-type program. If that becomes popular with cotton, I could see that coming over, made available on the feed grains and wheat, too, going down the road.
Your particular institution, along with Oklahoma State, have been kind of been leaders in promoting to farmers winter canola here in the Southern Great Plains. That's been a challenge for producers on trying to get RMA to establish this crop without having to write an insurance policy every time. Are we going to be able to get there, you think, with this particular crop?
Well, as a matter of disclosure, I have a financial interest in an Oklahoma farm, and we did grow canola this year, the whole farm was planted to canola. There is an insurance contract available in that particular county. I don't know if it's available statewide, but Garfield County is what I'm talking about. And canola was just unbelievably good. So writing premium checks for crop insurance wasn't a big deal. I guess you could say my tenant shouldn't have bought crop insurance this year because he didn't collect anything. But he is much better off financially with the way that canola crop came through. If that's the kind of technology, and there's been a lot of breeding, Oklahoma State's put a lot of research money into canola jointly with Kansas State, and if they can get that crop so that they can get past the winter kill, that's going to be a viable alternative to wheat, and that has a lot of implications for profitability of Oklahoma farmers so that you don't have to be continuous wheat.
Right.